think it is true. I wound up and I think you do.
I'm sorry, I didn't hit my button. I would like to welcome everyone to this meeting of the Child Support Guidelines Review Panel. We're going to begin this morning's meeting with a public hearing. We have four speakers that are signed up to address the panel, and what we're going to do is allow each speaker 5 minutes. If anyone has any additional materials they would like the panel to have, they can provide that to staff, and we'll be glad to look at any additional materials as well. I believe the first speaker is Mr. Skilling, Kenneth Skilling.
Chairman, I was going to let Ms. Gregory speak before me, so if that's okay.
That is fine. So then Helen Gregory will speak first.
My name is Helen Gregory. My dad passed when I was 18 years old, and to this day, I still miss him. As the years went by, I taught my children the importance of a dad. It takes two to make a child, and it takes two to love and financially support them. Judge's order supports so high that some dads lose their homes, their vehicles that they need to get to work on. I'll give you an example. Judge Southall, Dinwiddie County, J&D, issued a support order so high that this particular dad lost his home, lost his vehicle. Also in that order, there were no adjustments to his expenses. And this is other dads that have told me the same thing. Their travel expenses or any work expenses are not considered. The judge said, you don't have any expenses. I don't care. You're going to pay. Fathers don't mind paying. They want to pay. But they don't think it should be a lifestyle support for the mom or whatever she chooses to spend it on and not spend it on the children. This has got to change. Fathers are crying, committing crimes that they ordinarily would not do if it wasn't for the way the court system is set up today against dads. Dads are discriminated against so bad. All of them are painted by the media as a deadbeat dad. That is not true. I know so many dads that cry because they have to work so hard and then don't have the time to spend with their children because they're working. So I'm asking you today to please consider the guidelines. With the Affordable Care Act coming into play soon, insurance is going to go up, and he's paying, most dads are paying insurance on their children. If support guidelines go up, insurance go up, I'm afraid of what may happen to some of these dads. So I'm asking you today to please consider this. Don't paint the whole state of Virginia with a broad brush. Northern Virginia expenses are much higher than down here and further south. So please consider the area, what the father makes, his expenses. He should have a decent place to bring his children when he has them for visitation. He should be able to do recreational things with them. He shouldn't be able to just sit home and play with them because he's worked so hard and worked two jobs that he can't afford to take them somewhere else. So I'm begging you, please consider the areas of the state of Virginia, the dad's expenses, his work-related expenses. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. All right.
Sharon, I have a prepared statement here which I will make available. What I propose to do, if this is acceptable, is to essentially summarize my prepared statement. It consists of a three-page statement, and there is also an appendix. The statement addresses the issues that are before the panel today, and tries to introduce some wider considerations that seem to me are relevant to the issue of the state child support guidelines. And then appended to it, there is an appendix which deals, I prepared this some months ago to deal with the issue of joint custody. I understand that that's not on the committee's agenda, but I think it's relevant because some of the problems that I'm talking about in regard to the effect of child support on the interests of children are dealt with in the appendix. And it is relevant to the extent that one of the things that I'd like to recommend to the panel is that better provision be made for joint custody in the child support guidelines. My name's Kenneth Skilling, as you've heard. I'm a longtime resident of Fairfax County, and I've lived in Northern Virginia since 1975. I have a son and a daughter who are now in their 30s, but I paid child support for more than 10 years after my divorce in the late 1980s. I've been involved for many years with Fathers for Virginia, which is a support group for divorced and never married fathers that seeks to have a constructive influence on family policy issues, and it's in that respect that I'm here today. As I mentioned in my statement, I would like to address three issues, two of which are relate to the wider context of child support and to the background. My overall objective today would be to ask the panel to reject any proposals for significant increases in the child support numbers in the guideline. I've been looking at the two papers that were prepared by Dr. Venor for the panel, which are very lengthy and complex, and which make specific recommendations about what should be done. I have to say that it's quite difficult for a layperson to absorb these two papers because they deal with some very technical issues, and there's no executive summary, unfortunately, or at least there's none that I've seen. But the closest that I could see to a summary of what is being proposed there is on page 14 of the updated schedules report. That's the longer one, where it says that on page 14 that the average change under Schedule A, that is based on the 2012 federal and state income tax rates and FICA, is 75% per month, or 8.9%. The average change under Schedule B, which is based on the 2013 federal and state income tax rates, is $30 per month, or 4.5%. That seems to me to be the core of Dr. Venor's recommendations, and what it represents is a very substantial proposed increase in the state guidelines. On the background issue, I can understand members of the panel who may feel that this is such a complex issue and they don't want to make it more complex. However, I think it's worth considering some, if you like, extraneous factors. One is that there's been a steady increase in the proportion of children who grow up in single-parent families. There are all kinds of social problems, some of which are outlined in the appendix to my statement, that are associated with children who grow up in single-parent families. The question I think that has to be considered is there anything that can be done about this situation? And many people seem to think, well, yes, it's unfortunate, but there's nothing we can do about it. I think there are things that can be done, and one of them involves looking at the incentives for the creation of single-parent families and looking at the issue of whether fathers, the right thing to do with fathers is to essentially reduce them to nothing more than suppliers of financial support for their children, which is really what happens at the moment. The other thing that I would like to raise, the general issue that I would like to raise before I get on to the issue of Dr. Vanure's papers, is the question of incentive patterns. I've been following these issues for years, and one of the things that strikes me very forcibly is that the incentive effects of the present system are never considered. In other welfare issues, there has been some consideration of the incentive effects. I think of this as being a static analysis versus a dynamic analysis. If you think about things in static terms, what you do is you look at the issues and you say, well, what should we do on the assumption that everything continues the same? And that's what you're doing if you simply look at the child support numbers and say, well, we'll raise them. We won't give any consideration to what would happen in the long term. I think the more fruitful and the more useful approach is to use a dynamic approach that says what would happen in the long term. Pardon me?
A main point that you would like us to take away, given that we didn't have time to hear all your remarks.
Well, the two main points, I think, are that, first of all, I would suggest the committee not follow up the recommendations for a substantial increase in the child support amounts, and the other is that there be more adequate provision for joint custody, and in particular that we move away from the 90-day deadline, the cliff effect, to a sliding scale, which is much easier now that there are computerized programs for calculating child support.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Skinner? Thank you, Mr. Skinner. Darcy McGreer.
Yes. I was a non-custodial father paying child support. My children have grown out, gone out of the system. So I'm here to really talk about the future of Virginia and families and how child support helps incentivizes single families and the destruction of the family. And having gone through it myself, we've had a speaker here, Helen Gregory, communicate to you that there's an incentive. We have to remember child support is an unaccounted for payment. The custodial parent gets to spend that money any way that he or she wishes to spend. So when you decide to raise it or not raise it, remember it's all accounted for. They can spend it any way they want. There's no accounting for. Now, I know the committee here is for only determining how much child support should be paid or any conditions and exceptions, and maybe not the issue of how it's unaccounted for. I don't know if that's in the committee's direction that they can recommend to the legislature that since it's unaccounted for, there should be some accounting purpose. I don't know if that's in your legislative condition, but we have to remember that it's unaccounted for to be spent any way they want. And I've talked to fathers before, since I've been involved in this for years, in which their big concern is that does the money really go to the children and how it's spent, or do they spend it on their boyfriend or something like that? And Helen here, as Gregory has indicated, that you know many fathers, there's other factors that are not included in the child support. The next point I want to make is that the person who did the study that the committee's paid for, what we like to know is how you chose this person and what the payments are and how the costs are being determined. What we'd like to know is how we can get that information. The third thing is how many non-custodial parents are on your committee and how many are here today? That's what I'd like to know. Are there any non-custodial, you're supposed to have two non-custodial parents on your committee. Are they here today? So none of the non-custodial parents are here today at this meeting, right? And they're not here today, correct? My concern and others with me is that we don't really have representation for non-custodial parents on this committee, and that therefore the committee is going to be defective in its representation to the General Assembly. So what we like to do, since this is the last public meeting, I understand that we can make comments, is those of us who are concerned about the issues for non-custodial parents, we'd like to be able to have some way to contact these non-custodial parents to give them our points of view, because they're going to represent us on the committee, and we're concerned that we're not really getting representation on the committee.
Do you have a website available where you can submit any comments you wish for the panel to consider?
Well, we like to submit the comments directly to the non-custodial parents and be able to have them come directly to us and not to the committee as a whole. We would like to be able to communicate with them without communicating to the committee as a whole. Okay, well, I think my conclusion, many people's conclusion would be, is that this committee is defective in representing non-custodial parents and their issues, because you do not have non-custodial parents here at these meetings. I understand they have not been at previous meetings. So we have one that's been at the meetings, but the second one has not been. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm just saying, he's been at
several, but he wasn't at the last meeting.
Well, I'm not sure what the issue here is, why they're not really participating. Maybe they're not able to. Maybe the selection process wasn't good. Or I don't know why they're not really participating. Well, we would like to know then how many meetings they've participated in and the participation rate. Is that some information we can get? Oh, so it has a listing of all the attendees and when they attended.
Yes,
does it also list the names of the non-custodial parents in the, so that we're able to tell?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Good morning. I am a non-custodial parent who has since 2005 been within and out of the courts to gain joint custody of my daughter. The question I would have regarding the guidelines is that joint custody is stipulated within the guidelines as being one thing, but why does not the Division of Child Support have the authority to enforce what those guidelines stipulate? It seems it's been my experience that it's been left to the courts, and my experience since 2005 has been that the court has determined whether or not I spend X amount of time with my daughter. It has for, again, since 2005, I have been told that I am not interested in paying child support. That's why I petitioned the court to amend the guidelines for my specific case. Within the Division of Child Support, I have spoken with several managers, caseworkers, and given them the layout of my situation. And they have basically stipulated joint custody, you should do A, B, and C. But once I go to the courts have the jurisdiction to overrule or do whatever they want. My concern is that the best interest of my daughter is not being considered. And the welfare of my household, which my daughter lives in, is not being considered as well. I have to pay sole custody to a mother who does not have sole custody physically of my daughter. And my main question is, why does not the Division of Child Support have the authority to at least investigate what determines joint custody? Also, I would raise to the panel to consider what is being laid out as punishment towards non-custodial parents for arrearages, not paying child support. It has been my experience that my license then can be suspended, but yet I am required to work and to pay child support. It seems to me to be an oxymoron to take away someone's license and then require them to pay child support. I would just, again, reiterate that some of the guidelines, it's been my experience that some of the guidelines that are laid out are not, when it comes to the court, are not being, the best interest of the child is not being considered. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Cunningham, my name is Reeves. How are you this morning?
Good.
Mr. Cunningham, first of all, thank you very much for your remarks. I want to understand something. I'm a little bit confused, but if you could clarify, I'd appreciate it. Over in the statutes that govern custody, not child support, those statutes are over.
Correct. Well, let me explain it this way. As your definition,
the statutory.
I probably better should explain it. My situation is that it's shared custody. I have my daughter more than 100 days average on a year.
So you get the shared child support form.
Well, I have that in theory. My daughter is with me. She lives with me, like I said, more than 100 days out of the year. But I have been trying since 2005 to get the courts to amend the order because it stipulates now that I have joint legal custody, but sole custody physically belongs to the mother. So the order and the order from the court and the order that the Division of Child Support currently is following is the mother has physical custody, I have joint legal custody. But the actual situation is that it's a shared custody situation.
So,
yes.
Okay, thank you,
Mark. Yes.
I have a question, sir. Is
the other parent in your situation, is that parent's income less than 150% of the federal poverty guideline? Because that would make a difference in the calculations.
I don't believe so.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Cunningham, I just had one quick question.
Yes.
So was your guideline calculation done on a sole guideline worksheet? Do you know?
It's done on a sole guideline worksheet, yes.
So and
I have been trying, like I said, since for a while to get it amended or at least get them to do the shared or joint custody.
And what was the reason the judge gave for not doing that?
Honestly, I've gone before the court for, I think, maybe three times to have it amended. The first time the judge said he didn't believe that I wanted to pay child support. And so he refused it. Mind you, I had calendars going back to 2005, basically stating my time with my daughter. I also had the witness of the mother who stipulated, yeah, he does have his daughter on this amount of time. But the judge refused to, those two, it seems to me that those two things should have been credible and more than enough evidence to stipulate, okay, this is a shared custody or split custody situation. The judge also stipulated that because I came back, I'm not sure saying that it is the case, but the second time I was told that there was not enough evidence for him. Mind you, again, I had the word of the mother along with calendars, and I had the second time I had a witness who, I had a couple of witnesses actually. I had my parents and my wife who stipulated, you know, she's with us X amount of times. Mm-hmm. Also what I might want to add as well, there is a visitation order in place that depending on who you ask, is calculated as 87 days or it's calculated as 83 days. But in this situation, that has basically been the base. I mean, that's the minimum. And like I said, I keep my daughter more than 100 days out of the year. So, I mean, for example, the order stipulates that my daughter should live with me or come to me for 3 days on her winter vacation. Well, since she's never stayed less than a week, she gets 2 weeks for their winter vacation. So she stays with me for a whole week, at least. She's been, on several occasions, she stayed for the whole 2 weeks. So that's been reflected in the calendars. But like I said, the judge simply, it's my impression that the judge simply thinks that I'm trying to get out of paying child support when I'm just trying to balance it between the two homes because there's a whole lot of other things that I'm paying for other expenses as well, but, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham.
Yeah, well.
I believe those are all the speakers that have signed up to address the panel. Does the panel have anything additional from any of our presenters this morning? Okay. Thank you all very much. We appreciate your input. Okay, we need to turn off the recording.